Right, I hope I'm not going to upset anybody from what I have to say, but I feel that the issue is very, very important. And you know, there's a lot of words are said, and I've been campaigning. I started getting involved in 1991 whilst on bail, and whilst I was on bail for about 9 months, we formed an organisation called the Campaign to Legalise Cannabis International Association, CLCIA. And that was because we felt at the time that the Legalised Cannabis campaign, based in London, hadn't really done anything for almost 10 years. And we were getting a little bit sick of seeing our friends getting busted and going to prison. And we were getting a little bit sick of soap bar, bad quality, and stuff like that. We were just a bunch of tokers. Some people were educated and some were not educated. A lot were left wing, a few were right wing libertarians, and different backgrounds, different religions, and so on, and a couple of local business people. And the interesting thing was, in, to compare it with today, is that when we formed the CLCIA, the policy was that we advocate that the non-medicinal use of cannabis ought to be a matter of choice and not law. Now, it's interesting because we said the non-medicinal use of cannabis, because obviously we were aware that cannabis had medicinal uses. But we were coming from the point of view of the non-medicinal users, the recreational users, the people who use it for fun, to get high, to enhance the quality of their lives. Now, I'm one of those, you know. Now, strange enough, I went to an NCOD meeting last year in Antwerp, and in order to get there, we sat on a bus for best part of 12 hours, two of us, Mark came along as well, 12 hours on the bus, and we got to Antwerp at like 5 o'clock in the morning, sat around, and eventually, because the hotel didn't open until 7, eventually we got to the little hotel to discover that our rooms were on the top floor, and then we walked around Antwerp, and by about 11 o'clock in the morning, my legs were hurting dreadfully. Yeah, I do have some arthritis, you know, so that non-medicinal user, you know, who had no reason to use it medicinally, you know, now I was starting to get aches and pains of arthritis and things like that. I sat in the NCOD meeting for the first couple of hours and so, and we had a lunch break, and somebody came across with a nice bit of skunk. You know, let's call it skunk. I don't know what it was. It was strong cannabis. I got my little pipe out. I smoked it. And guess what? The pains in my legs disappeared. And for the first time in my life, I realised that I'd unwittingly become a medical cannabis user. That quite possibly, the reason why I wasn't getting a lot of problems was because I was using cannabis. It takes away, it distances you from the pain, and it stops the pain, right? It also keeps me high, it stops me being depressed. It stimulates me, it inspires me to write and to get on with my life. And stress, you know, maybe I don't suffer the stress that most people my age suffer. When I look at a lot of people my age who are not smoking cannabis, they're either politicians or they're religious or they're in the army or something like that, you know, or they're down the pub every night, or they're taking sleeping tablets and painkillers and this medicine and that medicine. And I'm thinking, well, I'm a bit overweight, I got a few pains, my teeth are going, my hair's gone grey, you know, but I'm not doing too bad really, because I don't feel the stress. Now, stress is one of the biggest causes of absenteeism, family breakup, crime, and mental breakdown, all sorts of problems. You know, actually, unwittingly, everybody who uses cannabis beneficially, right, is a medical user. So when we said the non-medicinal use of cannabis, we should have just said the use of cannabis. When we come into the LCA, we brought forward, we were more going to concentrate on the use of cannabis, but we wanted to make an alliance so that we could include those who wanted to fight for the right to self-medicate. We wanted to include people on, you know, wanted to fight for the use of cannabis hemp to, as a fuel, or, you know, on environmental issues. We wanted to include people who wanted to legalize cannabis because it made sense in terms of law and order. It made sense in terms of economics and so on. So we formed an alliance. Now, the purpose of the alliance, we hoped that we would be able to represent all the cannabis users. That's become quite obvious that that's impossible, because some of them don't want to be represented. They definitely didn't want to be represented by a political party. They didn't want anything to do with politics. This is what people were telling me. They thought, people that didn't know the people in the LCA, that we were just politicians jumping on the bandwagon. So eventually we decided that there's far more support out there than the votes we're going to get. And we decided that we'd made our mark on politics. We showed that we could form a party. We've successfully brought cannabis into the political arena. They're talking about it all the time. Whether they're saying good things or bad things, they're talking about it all the time. You know, they're spending millions and billions of pounds on it. They're calling it a Class C drug, and then they're spending millions of pounds trying to convince people it's still illegal. You know, like Jackie Spliff said. So what's happened since the LCA formed, because we've given, tried to give a platform to people to represent themselves, instead of us trying to represent people, you know, we are representing ourselves and what we want. And the people who, obviously people in pain, obviously people who suffer and receive such obvious medical benefit, you know, have got a very, very powerful case and a great urgency of need for cannabis to be accessible, good quality cannabis to be accessible. But where do we draw the line? What is medical use and what is recreational use? I know people who've been smoking cannabis since they were in their 20s and they're now in their 50s. They've suddenly become medical users. I know people, including people with MS, who used to smoke cannabis before they got MS. I know people who now they suffer from their illness, they take a certain amount of cannabis. It doesn't apply to all the medicinal users. I think Pat is an exception. They take a certain amount of cannabis that relieves the symptoms or helps them, but they don't stop there. They then become a recreational user and they get high. I know people who don't take it for pain. They get high, but it does help the back pain. You know, so, and there's been surveys done with the general public. Do you support the legalization of cannabis? It seems to be somewhere between 45% and 55% agree that, you know, cannabis should be legalized, full stop. Right? Well, not full stop, because they want it regulated or whatever. Ask the people, do you agree with the legalization of cannabis for medicinal use? And 90 to 95% of people agree. So what's the, okay, then we're all medicinal users. Let's not worry about the recreational use, we're all medicinal users. From the moment we smoke to the moment we stop smoking, in a sense, there's another thing that people say, I don't mind it legal if doctors can prescribe it. Well, that's complete, utter nonsense. Doctors do not prescribe plants. A doctor can't write you a prescription for peppermint plant. You know, he can advise you to take peppermint from the garden, make it into tea. He can't write you a prescription. It's not a medicine in terms of the law, right? It can only be possible for a doctor to legally recommend cannabis when it's legal. But whilst it's illegal, he's breaking the law as much as anybody else. So what I want to try and get away from is this distinction between medicinal use and recreational use. Now, what's happened in the last few years is that the last general election, for instance, a lot of our candidates pushed the medicinal use. They maybe they gained more votes, or maybe they thought they gained more votes. It did seem that the vote went down. And I did get comments from people saying, well, the LCA isn't representing me anymore as a recreational user. You know, it's like it's okay if you go to court and you're ill and you get a lesser sentence. Now, there's a word that I haven't really heard mentioned much today, if at all. And that word is justice. You know, where is the justice in allowing somebody to use cannabis because they've got an illness, but not allowing somebody to use cannabis because they don't have that illness? Secondly, what is the justice in allowing somebody to use a medicine that relieves their pain and their symptoms and eases their life, and not allowing somebody to use a cannabis which unwittingly prevents illness? A preventative medicine is just as much a medicine as a curative or an ameliorative medicine. Where is the justice in it? When we asked the government, we issued our challenge to the government. It's called the challenge, and it went, and we printed we had a copy made in Braille, and sent it off to David Blunkett, so he could read it himself. About 6 or 7 months later, we had to write and say, did you get it? You know, Mr. Blunkett, you know, what's happened to it? And they finally said, oh yes, we did. Right. Eventually, they came out and they said, the answer to our challenge, which was basically to explain to us what is the justice in this punishment of people who aren't doing any harm. You know, it doesn't matter whether it's spiritual use, medical use, it doesn't matter how, whether you smoke it, stick it up your bum, like Pat said, or put it in your lip, you know, look at it, you know, just plant it and throw it in the bin. If you're not hurting anybody, if there's no victim, what is the justice? And their answer, of course, they didn't have an answer. They said, the reason why it's illegal. Now, I'm not asking the reason why it's illegal. I know why it's illegal. Because too many people make money out of it being illegal. That's why it's illegal. It was made illegal in 1928 because of financial reasons, all combined, all tied up with the cotton industry, opium production in places like Turkey and Egypt, and the fact that hemp was a serious competitor to cotton. So if the opium countries were about to lose their income from opium, cotton being their second source of income, they wanted to boost cotton. And then, of course, the petroleum companies and the drug companies and nylon companies and the paper mills, everybody started to realize they could make money out of hemp being made illegal. When they made it illegal in Britain, they didn't make hemp illegal. Everybody used hemp. You know, it went back to our great-great-grandparents for hundreds of years. They were using hemp. All of the actually British Empire existed because of hemp, because they used it for oil for the boats. They used it for sails. They used it for rope. They used it for clothes. They used it for food. You know, and the whole empire was built on hemp. Much the same way as we made so much money out of the opium trade between China and India. You know, it's all down to money. I know why it's illegal. Now you've got the criminal injustice system. They're all the lawyers, all the judges, all the clerks, all the prison officers, the probation officers, they're all getting paid to deal with those harmless little cannabis users who don't even want to argue about it, you know. There's too much money here. But why does the government say it's illegal? Right? It's illegal because it's a dangerous drug. Well, I mean, sugar's quite dangerous for a lot of people. Sugar actually causes more problems for a greater number of people than cannabis ever did. Coffee. Do you know coffee causes your brain cells to go spiky? that affects your short-term memory. So if you're smoking loads of blow and drinking loads of coffee and you can't remember something, it could be one or the other, you know. Oh, it causes psychosis. Well, lots of things seem to cause psychosis. They send soldiers to war and they come back psychotic, but they still send them to war, you know, over money, you know. So if cannabis is dangerous, if a young teenager, for instance, smokes loads of cannabis and has mental problems, what is the justice in arresting him and taking him to court? Arresting him and taking him to court is going to cause more problems. Throwing him into prison, and I can speak from experience from seeing people in prison, is going to cause more problems. Is there any justice in punishing me or you because the child or the teenager has developed mental problems? What's that got to do with us? We, you know, unless you're supplying them, maybe there's a connection. If we're not supplying them, what's it got to do with us? That's a health issue. If you find somebody who suffers after taking a drug, you don't call the police, you call a doctor. It's a health issue. That's not no reason to criminalise millions of people. Over the last 30 years, a million people in Britain have been given criminal records only on cannabis. Now, why? No. In those days, when we're going back 30 years ago, there weren't cases of cannabis psychosis and schizophrenia in people, you know. That's got nothing to do with it. It's just another ploy. What's your other reason for wanting it to be illegal? International treaties. They stipulate that we have to ban it. Oh, that's okay then, you know. So I go to prison, no problem. You know, I grew a couple of plants. No problem, international treaties. Your Mrs. Jones's son gets locked up or goes to court, has his career ruined, you know, not so fortunate as David Cameron, you know, gets a criminal conviction. That's okay, international treaties. Where's the justice in that? What else do they say? We believe that if cannabis is legalized, the use will go up. Well, that's an interesting thing, because I've even heard a lot of campaigners say, no, it won't go up. It won't go up. I darn well hope it does go up, because 95 or 99% of people who use it seem to benefit from it. So if it goes up, 99% of the new people, hopefully, will benefit from it. You know, in any case, you're talking about the value of the law as a deterrent. You know, what you're saying is, let's punish the people we catch for doing something with no victim in order to discourage other people from doing something with no victim. That's complete and utter nonsense. This is where we've got to with this government. Now, the other thing that's happening in the campaign is that we've become very much reactive. Now, the prohibitionists have got millions, billions of pounds available, and we've got a few thousand. Now, what happens is the Daily Mail comes out with some claim. Woman who drew a car that killed somebody was on cannabis. Somebody crossed the road and died, they were on cannabis. Mad axeman was on cannabis. They should be arrested, they should be put in prison, they should be punished if they've hurt people, if they've damaged people, you know. The claims of psychosis, I've heard, and schizophrenia, I've heard claims of memory loss, I've heard baldness, sterility and impotence, cancer, it can cause cancer, bronchitis, it can cause asthma. It can burn your lips. You know, but now, so, okay, just assume that's all true, right? What we have to do as part of our educational program is try to correct that somehow, to try to counteract that somehow. But as much as we try to do that, They keep coming out with, again, another version, another person, another survey that they paid for, or scientists that they sponsored to produce a report. You know, but let's just for a minute say that that's all true, because it's certainly all true on alcohol, and that's not illegal. So how can there be a justice in punishing people, you know, even if it's all true? What do you do with these people who suffer impotence or baldness or burn their lips? What do you do with them? Do you take them to court and punish them? You know, and this is my belief, that we need to focus. And since we've stopped being a political party, in a lot of ways we haven't quite found that focus. This year we decided that medical users were particularly at a disadvantage, because they need it now, you know, within an hour, within a day, they need it. They need quality, you know. They don't need, on top of all their problems, to be exposed to criminals, gritweed, soap bar, and dodgy dealers, you know. They need to have access to a supply, hopefully grown by themselves or a carer or a friend, maybe through a cannabis social club. We'd like to see something like that. You know, I would personally. So we decided that it was time to start trying to focus a little bit on the medical side, because these cases were coming to court. Like the High Court had ruled that medical defence necessity wasn't necessarily applicable, that THC for MS, who were doing such good work, were going to court and facing prison possibly, and they're on 9 months of suspended sentences. So when the newspaper said THC for MS walk free from court, they didn't walk free from court. They'd got a 9 month prison sentence as a reward for all the good work they did. So, and Pat, you know, Pat, who uses enough for her medical need, I believe, and not to get high, right? That case was coming to court, you know, a pensioner in her own house. We felt last January that we needed to try to concentrate on this a little bit more, you know, and I'm glad we did that. But I do think that justice applies equally to all, right? I wouldn't like it legalized for medical reasons with everybody else getting nicked. I'd still be campaigning. You know, I don't believe there's any more or less justice in punishing one person because he says he uses it as a sacrament, or another person because he uses it for fun, or another person because he uses it as medicine. What was the United Nations talking about? A drug-free world. Now, I was thinking about these sort of words. I was thinking, a world free of cannabis. You know, really, really, really close to my ideal. Right? It's only that there's one word in the wrong place. Of. A world of free cannabis. That's what we want. And I think that we need to somehow, you know, regather our energies, pull in some new blood, some new ideas. And I hope that now, to throw this to the floor, and invite everybody to say what they think that we should be doing. You know, criticise the LCA for what we've been doing. Please remember that everybody's volunteers, we're not getting paid, so don't over-criticise anybody. My mum used to say, when you do that to somebody, look, see where they're pointing. You know, don't be hypocritical. You know, don't say, you should be doing this, you should be doing that. Say, we should be doing this, we should be doing that. Let's be in alliance. Let's use what we've got in this room and the people who wanted to come but couldn't come. It's going to total at least double the number of people here. Let's go home. Let's try and find some new members. You don't find new members by putting adverts in the paper. You find new members by inspiring people. If they think, well, you know, this is something worth fighting for. You know, and talking to people. And the more new members we got, even if it's only money, you know, it means we can do more, you know. But let's try to, you know, what I'm asking you for is suggestions of how we can focus. So my personal thing is, like I say, justice, no victim, no crime. The justice, you know, to question the justice in the law. When you read the UN Declaration of Human Rights and you read about the right to privacy and you read about the right to religion and belief, and that means you don't have to have God in it at all because it's religion or belief. When you read about your rights and you find out later down in the articles, it's very specific that the authorities can only interfere with your rights if in the interests of public health, public order, security of the country, and stuff like that. Now, Granny was growing a few plants in her house. How was she interfering with the rights of other people or the security of the country or national or public health, you know? That is very specific. Now, when you go, and I tried once to go to a European Court of Human Rights before we had the Human Rights Act in Britain, and there was about 360 of us, and we laid a case based upon our beliefs that cannabis was beneficial to us. Some, and people made statements. Some said religiously, some said enhanced music and make some better artwork or writing. Some said it was relieve their pain or their suffering. You know, it was simply that everybody who made a statement benefited from using cannabis. And that's our belief. And we're entitled, and not just alone, but we're entitled together to hold our belief, to change our belief. It says every man is entitled to hold or to change his belief. It doesn't say out of these list of, like, we accept this, like Christianity, Buddhism, Hinduism, Muslim, like, oh, Rastafarianism is a bit dubious, like Pattism, you know, Pattism not even in the picture. Every person has the right. Pat has the right to Pattism, you know, Dillis has the right to Dillisism, Markism, Ingoism, Donism, Chrisism, we're all the isms. We all have that right. But when you go to a barrister or a judge, now the barrister I approached, Roger Warren Evans, who's anti-prohibition of drugs, said, you'll never get a barrister or a judge to swallow that. I'm not asking them to swallow anything. I'm just asking them to read the words that they wrote. They wrote it. We didn't write it. And the reason why we wrote it, to stop the need for rebellion. Right? It's time to start rebelling. It's time to start doing something about this. This is serious. I started campaigning, like I say, in 1992. Had a break, courtesy of Her Majesty. Came back, settled into my little probation office routine on parole, and then started getting back into campaigning again. To start with, I wrote letters in somebody else's name, because he didn't mind putting his name up, but I didn't feel safe, you know. Then I started writing letters in my own name. I've carried on 15 years. Michael Fell, Michael Price, Levi McCarthy, David Barker. You probably don't know many of those names. Biz Ivel, Dottie Baldwin, Eagle Bill, Pat Mandenin, Stuart Talbot, Derek Large, Eddie Ellison, Old Ed, Lynn Zimmerman. They've all lived and they've all died under the prohibition of cannabis. Cannabis didn't kill them. I'm not saying the law killed them. They've all lived and they've all died under the prohibition of cannabis. We're all living under it. I don't want to see anybody die under it. Let's change it.